Hey, g'day.
Blog Talk
Hello.
Radio.
Hi, everyone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want to have fun.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in Stories for Children magazine at .org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Follow me to the world of ink.
Hello there, everyone. My name is Irene Rose, and I want to welcome all of you to the Stories for Children show at Blog Talk Radio's World of Ink Network with hosts V.S. Grenier and Chris Quinn Christopherson. It's truly an honor to be with you today. It's Monday, May the 16th, and it's 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. As always, Stories for Children can be listened to live at blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network, all one word, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you'd like as well, at the same address or on iTunes. Just search for World of Ink Network and you'll find our shows on iTunes. We'll be taking your calls today towards the end of the show, and if you'd like to call in and ask a question of our guests, we'd love to have you call. The phone number to call is 714-242-5259. Okay, and that's it. I'll let the host take over.
Thanks, Irene. It's great having you here.
You're welcome.
This is V.S. Grenier. From the World of Ink Network on the Stories for Children show, and Irene Rose and Chris Quinn Christopherson, of course, are hosting with me as always. So we're glad to have you guys both here. So welcome, ladies.
Thanks.
Hello.
Thank you.
I just want to kind of share a little bit about our guests really quick. We have two guests today on the Stories for Children show here on BTR's World of Ink Network. They're the author and illustrator of just a delightful, fun, really lively written book and illustrated book called The Brother's Foot. It's illustrator Rhonda Eden. She's actually born from South Australia, so it's going to be fun having an accent on the show for the first time. And through her childhood, she jumped about horses, and she's excited because now that she lives here in the United States, she actually raises horses and does all kinds of fun things with them. But she also has a background as a teacher, a storyteller, a writer. She's obviously an illustrator. She's been a touring art curator and a gallery owner, among other things. She's just a well-rounded lady. And then we also have Steve Cormier, who is the author of The Brother's Foot. And what's fun about having Steve on the show today is, besides the fact he's from Grand County, Colorado area, is he has over 30 years being an award-winning songwriter. He's written, produced, and released 60 very successful CDs. He's also played for live audiences, so it's going to be fun because this is his first children's book. But with that musical background, it's going to make it an interesting show. So welcome, Steve and Rhonda, to the show. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the fun thing about the Brother's Foot book, besides it being, of course, Steve's very first children's book that you've written, is that it's actually based off a song that you've written, right, Steve?
Well, I didn't actually write this song.
Okay.
I first heard it, I was probably 5 years old, and my parents bought us kids a record player for Christmas one year, and there was a 45, I remember 45s, there was a 45 record that came with the record player. And it was on one side was a song called the Foot Foot Song, and the other side was I'm Glad I'm Not a Rubber Ball or something. And Ray Bolger actually sang them. And that song stuck in my head forever, and I've done all kinds of goofy stuff with it over the years. And then I just got an idea of, wouldn't this be a cool, you know, children's book? Because obviously it stuck with me, you know. Mm-hmm. It's such a catchy tune and everything. And so basically I wrote down, you know, just some things based on the song. And, of course, then the music has to go along with it. And I knew, you know, Ronnie knew all the, she knew all about it. She's done it too through her, you know, storytelling. And so knowing what a great illustrator she is, I asked her if she'd be interested in, you know, helping me out with this thing. And she said, sure. So.
That's where it started. Yeah, I mean, it's a delightful book, and I love the illustrations because they're fun. You do a great job, Rhonda. I mean, they're full of fun. You can just see the characters just, you know, dance around having a great old time in the story. And what I love is that it's three brothers, and at first I thought, like, when you guys first approached me about the book and doing a World of Ink tour and having you on the show and stuff, I thought that their last name was Foot. I didn't realize that each one of them, that's actually, one's named Foot, and one's Foot, or something like that. I'm sorry about that in my head. I think it's three Foots for the last brother. And I'm like,
maybe
wow,
they were triplets,
okay.
Or something.
Yeah, like that got really confusing there. Because I wasn't expecting it to be their first name. I was thinking it was going to be their last name, and they're bunnies. Which makes it interesting because that's the whole point of the book too, is, you know, every bunny of course has, that they know, has a regular bunny name, and they have Foot for their name basically, which makes them unique, and they're brothers. So Rhonda, when you read the manuscripts, I'm sure, you know, Steve's seen the manuscript of the book and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you automatically see what the brothers were going to look like right away, or?
I did a lot of different sketches, and I actually have some sketches I was looking through the other day of the original ones. The original ones, believe it or not, were actually fatter than these, even though these guys are sort of podgy, and they sort of looked a bit like insects when I look back on it. So I kept on changing them because I wanted them to be sort of round and sort of cute, but not that round. And I had them set in different settings. At one stage, I actually did a lot of Photoshop with them and had them set in real places, actually places in Australia. I was looking for places that looked as much as like a briar patch, even though I didn't really know what that was. But I found a sort of real scrubby place where we lived a few years ago, and I put them in there, and that was sort of cool, but it just didn't seem right somehow. Just didn't work exactly for me, so I just kept on scribbling, and like I do, I usually just put a huge piece of newsprint on my easel and just scribble and scribble and listen to music and see what comes out, and eventually they just evolved as they are. And there's sort of one that's Foot is sort of chubbier than the others, and Foot is sort of long, so they have their own sort of persona, and Foot himself is sort of more in the middle, more sort of normal.
Right.
But yeah,
no, they're
sort of
cute.
Fun just playing and letting it evolve more than anything else.
Now, did you guys talk a lot over the phone as you worked on the book together? Because, I mean, in most cases, the author and illustrator never have any contact with each other, because the publisher will just, you know, find the illustrator and say, here you go, and you just go to work. But, I mean, obviously, you know, Steve sought you out. So was there a lot of long conversations over the phone and trying to get an idea of what each scene for the book was going to look like?
We did it
through email, didn't we?
Yeah, we're keeping up with modern technology. Yeah, it was mainly email. And we sort of think alike in a lot of ways, but quite often Steve will help me out with illustrations, because he himself is really a very good visual artist. That's one thing that you probably don't know about him. Can I tell some tales, Steve?
Mm-hmm.
Steve, am I going to tell tales? Oh, you're also a sign painter? Yeah. He's also a sign painter, does the old type signs, you know, sandblasted wooden signs with beautiful, beautiful illustrations on them. So Steve is where I got my inspiration to start with. I started helping him with some signs and sort of took over the illustration part a little bit, but he is really good. So he's helped me out with a few of the, you know, the ideas for the illustrations as well.
That's great. Now, obviously, Steve, you'd mentioned that. For some reason, I thought you wrote the song. I guess, you know, I wasn't paying attention close enough. You know, the tour. I'm sorry about that because I know you sent me the background of the book, but that's what I get when I'm like doing those bazillion things at one time. But because I know that there's a song that comes with the book, because Irene was actually, you know, you and Irene were talking about that before the show started, and that the tune obviously gets stuck in your head. Did you rewrite the song that you heard as a kid, or did you actually write a new song to go with the book then? Because I haven't heard the song. I've only seen the book.
Okay. The song is, this one is, I did not write it. It was all, well, like I said, I got it first when I was about 5 years old and heard it. It's just always stuck in my head all these years. And then I got the idea. So then it took me actually 2 or 3 months on the internet trying to figure out who wrote the song. And because all I knew was it was called the Put-Put Song and Ray Bolger sang it, you know. And I finally found out it was written by three guys, Sid LeMay, and anyway, and so I got through all this stuff. I got the rights to be able to reproduce the song, you know, legally and all that kind of thing. And so I did all the music on the CD in the book. You know, I played everything, but I did not write this, you know, particular song.
So it's you performing it then.
So the story came from the song, right?
Right, yeah.
The story came from the song, which is sort of unusual too, is rather than the song coming from the story actually was built around the song, which I think is sort of neat.
No, that's very neat. I mean, it's one of the few things that we've only had one other tour. It was a co-author team that... couple of months back that it was a dad and a daughter who actually had written a exactly what you're saying, they actually wrote the story first and then they turned it into a song. So it's neat to actually have the Brothers Foot with us, you know, being the second book that, you know, has a song that goes with it, but it actually being the reverse. The song came first and then the song and then the book came. versus the other way around. But I think that's great because, I mean, at least I know for me with, you know, having three kids, and I mean, my kids are really spaced out. They're 15, 6, and 15 months. So they're really spaced out. But it's fun kind of watching them because there was shows that my son watched when he was younger as a kid. And, you know, there were some that, of course, had a lot of music in them and then some that didn't. And I have found that the shows that were around when he was a kid, even like when I was a kid, that are still around, usually have music in them, you know. I mean, I think a lot of people reason why they like Sesame Street, not just because of the, you know, fun, lovable characters, but they sing all the songs that are just, you know, once you hear them, they get stuck in your head for hours in the day. And then, you know, then our kids get to hear them. And so it's that whole cross-generation kind of thing. Music really crosses the generations, and it's one of those things that, you know, I think helps a book, you know, become a classic. I mean, I think of just even the Dr. Seuss books. I think a lot of the reason why they've done so well over the years is because, I mean, they've never been turned to songs. Well, I guess How the Grinch Stole Christmas did. But, you know, it was the rhyming.
Something
and
catchy.
And they're very catchy. And so that's what I love about The Brothers Foot. I mean, like I said, I haven't heard the song. I've only, you know, got to see your guys' book. Because it's been out to all the reviewers and stuff for your World of Ink tour, but I really love the fact that it wasn't just a book. It was a book that also has a song with it, because I know with, like I said, with my kids, when they watch TV, the shows that they love the most usually have those catchy songs that they run around all day singing, and I go to bed, and that's what I hear when I'm sleeping at night, is that song playing over and over and over again in my head.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing because, you know, that's I think that's what makes kids want to, you know, read and be involved in the creative process, because that's what music does and that's what reading does. It inspires that imagination for young kids. So I think it's great that you guys have done that. Now, I know that you guys are doing the World of Ink tour. Are you guys doing anything in your local areas that, you know, with the books, getting out there, doing school visits, any of that kind of stuff with signings?
We did a thing, was it a year ago? I don't know.
Yeah, about this time last year.
We did a tour of all the libraries here around Grand County, and
uh-huh.
and they have a children's program kind of thing, and so we were promoting the book, and then of course Ronnie, you know, she's done a lot of this, you know, with the, well, Rhonda, why don't you let them know what we did?
Oh, I used to be a storyteller for many years, and I toured Wyoming and Colorado, a little bit of South Dakota, all those states around there, as an Australian storyteller. So I would teach about Australia through songs and dance and silly stuff, basically. So I did that for years, and being a teacher, as a junior primary teacher, which is like lower elementary from 5 to 8 year olds. So, yeah, I've had a lot of experience doing song and dance, and play the guitar really badly. And I play the
didgeridoo. No, you're all right.
Oh, I haven't picked it up for a long time, actually. But I play the didgeridoo and a lot of percussion instruments. And I sing. I don't sing very well either, which is really great for kids, because then you can say, "Hey, kids, sing loud, so no one can hear me. Help me out here." And they love that sort of thing. So I sort of have retired semi from that, and so I made a comeback there. And then we are on the 4th of June. We've got a Arts in the Park Day in Kurt Gowdy State Park up here in Wyoming, and I'm doing an art event. And at the end of that, Steve's going to appear, and we're going to do a Brother's Foot session. So that should be fun. But but as far as, I mean, it would be really good to be able to get that out there on the road a lot, and I know we'd do a lot better, but we both have our other careers, as you probably can appreciate, to fit this into. So I don't know. Maybe when we're really old and gray, we might get out and do it.
I know it's hard. I mean, because I do a lot with stories for children, which, I mean, definitely Chris and Irene can vouch for. And it is hard because, you know, I just besides doing stories for Children Magazine and the World of Ink tours and my different shows here on Blog Talk Radio, I do have, you know, a picture book that I've written, and I have other ones that I'm, you know, right now are circulating for publication. And I keep thinking, oh, my gosh, if I have another one that gets published, I'm going to have to go back out and do all the marketing. And I'm like, where am I going to have the time? I have three kids at home. I have a company I'm running, you know. I do a lot of freelance work. It is hard. It's very challenging.
It's full time.
But
I
really can see with the Brother's Foot, you know, especially with the fact, even though Rhonda's, of course, being so modest there about, you know, I can't really play the guitar or sing. I mean, the fact is you guys can really have a lot of fun with the kids, you know, at book signings and school events and stuff, because not just sharing about what it's like to be an illustrator or a writer, and the typical things that go in an author visit, you guys also have the music, so you can get them up and dancing and involved in a whole new way, and really bring that whole world to them in a different way, which I think is just an amazing thing. Now, have you guys ever thought about possibly doing a series to this book? I mean, it definitely is open to do a lot with.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tell them about that, too.
Yeah, we actually, started another one, and it's the Brother's Foot and the Rabbit Proof Fence, and so they go on to a new adventure, and there's a new song that I wrote. Imagine it's called the Carrot Song, but it's I mean, if you want, I don't know how much time you got, but I can. You said you never heard the first song. I got my guitar.
No, I haven't.
I want to hear a little ditty from you.
Oh, we would love to hear a little bit from you.
Okay, let me. I'll just do a little of the first song. This is the Footfoot song, which is the book. I hope you can hear me. There's one foot and Footfoot and a brother they call Footfoot. Three rabbits, they played games. They had peculiar names. First called one foot, second called Footfoot. Third called Footfoot. Three rabbits lived close by the woods, but in the fields they played. They lived their life in a bramble patch, and they sang this song all day. Oh, one foot and Footfoot.
Oh,
anyway,
that's
the idea.
We heard you fine, and that was
that's
great.
That's the song that everything's based on. So.
Oh, that's so
and it will
cute.
Go round and round and round your head.
Yes.
That's great.
It's probably a good thing. It's probably a good thing I haven't played the song over. Because, I mean, normally when we get stuff in, I definitely get both my girls. They're my youngest ones. They're my 6 and 14, and not 14, she's now 15-month-old. And they'll climb up on my lap and, you know, when I'm working. And any time that I have, like, a new book trailer that I'm working on for somebody or you know, when like I said, the other co-author team that had a book that they wrote a song for, and I was playing with it. It was like, "Mommy, play it again, play it again." Yeah, so I probably they would love that song. They'd probably have me playing it in the car all day long, which would make it hard for me to concentrate on everything else I needed to do. But it's a very cute song. I love it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what you guys do with the second book, because I can see just because the three brothers. You know, they're different personalities, but they have, of course, you know, they like to get into mischief and do all that, you know, crazy stuff that kids like to do. And so I can just see so much that you guys can do with them, you know, and a lot of different storylines that it can go into. So I'm excited to hear that you're actually going to be doing a sequel to it. So that's exciting. Now,
go ahead, Ryan.
I was just going to say, now, Steve, I know that, you know, typically your background, of course, is in music and stuff. So, being a debut author in children's writing and obviously working on, you know, and doing a sequel to the Brothers Foot book, do you see yourself writing beyond the series, like trying to branch out into some other different, you know, characters or even maybe doing like chapter books or
in the first one, they're, I don't know what you call their nemesis or the scary part, you know, is just when the hunters come into the woods, you know,
right,
and they're going to shoot the rabbits or whatever, and so the idea, the rabbits start singing, and then the hunters drop their guns and sing along, and everybody's, you know, happy ending thing, and then the sequel, after they're, you know, wild adventure with the hunters and everything, and they decide to take a road trip, so to speak. So they wander on down the path, and they come across this vegetable garden that's, you know, filled with carrots and all this great stuff, but it's got this rabbit-proof fence around it, and the gardener is a fox, you know. So there's another, you know, adversary there. And so they figure out a way, while his back is turned, to sneak in through the gate, you know, and then, anyway, so at the end, the fox finds him, and he's about to, you know, chop him up with his hoe and everything, and they start singing this new song called the Carrot Song, which is the one I wrote, and at the end, then the fox starts singing along, and they all end up having dinner together, eating vegetables and stuff. So
Wait, I think
my other
idea
like would be that they all go to visit their cousins in Australia and see the real rabbit fruit fence. But
the real rabbit fruit fence.
That would be the third.
A little bit of history and culture there. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I would see that as sort of the magic of music. You know, the magic and the power of music. Because it actually saves their lives, you know, and it's just a real good plug for having music in your life and dance and all those things that make it a better place.
Well, I totally agree, and No, I wasn't. Well, I shouldn't say no. My two older ones didn't really have music on them because they did. But I noticed with my youngest that with her, because I used to sing to my first two when I put them to sleep. But with my youngest, she, even though she liked me to sing, she wanted me to keep singing. It's like, well, you can't keep singing once you put them in bed, because the whole point is you need to leave the room so they go to sleep. So I actually got this little like caterpillar thing from I think it was Leapfrog or something. Anyways, but it plays classical music. And I found with her that because she's had it since infancy and she's still, being 15 months old, still goes to sleep listening to that. Mommy doesn't have to hum to her anymore, thank goodness. But, I can play the classical music, but she tends to be more musically inclined. And I've heard this for years, but I've definitely seen it now that I have three. I mean, and I know every kid is different and their personalities are dynamically different. And my son, he grew up listening to I had played music on like a CD and stuff, like kids' songs and stuff, and rock them and stuff. And with my middle daughter, I used to sing songs. I used to actually sit there and rock her and sing songs in a rocking chair because she preferred that. But I've noticed with my daughter, with her listening to classical music especially, that she tends to be quicker at problem solving and figuring things out. And I know that from what I've heard over the years and from watching the three of them and the fact that Sabrina, like I said, tends to be more musically inclined than her other two siblings, that children who really surround themselves with music and are gravitated toward tend to, I don't want to say have a higher IQ, but they tend to just perform better, it seems, academically. And so I think that's so I mean, I think it's very true what you're saying. Children, and I think kids are happier when they have music. I know growing up as a kid, my parents, they listened to Bread and they listened to ABBA and Neil Diamond and all that. And I still, when I hear those songs, I mean, it automatically triggers, me dancing around in the living room and singing the songs in the car, and just it really lifts me up and it makes me feel good. So. And I love the fact that, of course, at the end of both of your books that you have, the sequel that's going to be coming out eventually and The Brother's Foot, is that when things are obviously going to turn for the worse, they start singing, and, of course, everybody gets happy, and it's true, music does do that. I think it really does. So I think that's a great lesson that you're teaching kids, that if you, listen to at least good music, because there is bad music out there, that doesn't tear you, that tears you down versus lifts you up, that, it can really change your mood.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I was just going to say, one a big influence for this kind of stuff, too, is like Shel Silverstein, because he did that. He would combine his children's books with his music, what a crazy guy, it's kind of.
And it was a little on the silly
side. If Dr. Seuss, wrote songs, it kind of thing, but, we always did, he wrote the, I always call it the alligator song, but it's called the unicorn song, and we always do a little dance to it, and Shel Silverstein wrote that.
Okay.
I used to talk about that too. I don't think a lot of people realize, at least some of the people that I know. I mean, a lot of people know Shel for, of course, his wonderful books, but I don't think a lot of people realize that, besides the books that he wrote, and of course, his poetry and stuff, that he did write some music and a lot of people sing it and don't realize that he wrote it.
I really didn't. I'd sang that, the unicorn song. I always thought of the Irish Rovers and all that. And I didn't realize, because I put that on one of my CDs along with a couple other songs I used to always do live, besides, most of my stuff is my own music. But so I had to research it and get the rights, and it was like, wow, Shel Silverstein wrote that. And then there's another one that I do. It's called The Three-Legged Man. And he wrote that, too.
Oh, really?
Wow.
You know,
most people know him as a children's book author, but I remember him doing articles in Playboy magazine way back and stuff. The guy was quite a talent. But, that's pretty, he obviously knew the, to combine music with stories, and yeah. Actually every song is a story anyway, you know. Anyway, at least the ones I like are tell yeah. more of a story or about a place or something. It, you know, it doesn't have to be just a love song or that kind of thing. But
no, I agree. And I think the songs that last, you know, like you're saying, over the generations, they tend to be that way. They tell a story. So it crosses those generations, just like, you know, like your book, The Brother's Foot. I mean, I know it came from a song, but just the book itself, even if it didn't, it's one of those kind of books that will cross generations to come, because it's just the story that it tells. Everybody can relate to it. Everybody takes something away from it, and that's just so key to children's writing and writing in general. I even think for adult writing that's pretty much the same thing, too, with the books that do well there. Have the same kind of effect. So, but now with The Brother's Foot, because I mean, obviously they're in a song. Did you had to develop those characters? I mean, I know with the picture book, you don't develop them too much, but you do develop them to some degree. Did you do any type of character sketches, either you, Rhonda, or Steve? You know, for to kind of get an idea of more of who they were. So when you were illustrating them and putting the text together, you could see them as real characters, or was it really the song that helped kind of drive that for you?
Oh, sort of a bit of each, I think. I think that the fact that they sort of evolved from something that was totally different to what they are, and they trying to keep that consistency too, so they look the same, you know, on every page, so their character looks the same. I had to sort of develop individuality on each one of them. So yeah, I guess I did that. But one of the things that people do comment on, and I notice it myself, is they sort of look like kangaroos, don't you think?
Well, I guess, yeah, on the front cover when they're all kind of stretched out, yeah, they kind of tend to be a little bit smaller on top and a little bit bigger on the bottom.
It didn't matter what I did to them, they sort of look like kangaroos with long ears. And I thought, well, I'll just go with that. I mean, I can't help it. I'm Australian.
It's funny that you should have said, Tiki. Because of the long ears, I knew they were rabbits. But now you say that, I'm thinking of the cover on the front because their faces are, you know, aimed up toward the sky, so they're a little bit more elongated. I'm going, yeah, that's true. They kind of do on the front.
And then they have the big feet. But you know, the strange thing is their feet. The feet sort of look like cartoon kangaroos, but in actual fact, kangaroos don't have feet like that at all. Rabbits do. But kangaroos don't.
Rabbits,
they actually
have feet,
a long pointy toe with a claw at the end. So really, really, they're not like kangaroos at all. But they're like a cartoon kangaroo, which does have the big foot. Yeah, but I've sort of gone with that. I tried to change them, and that's the way they want to be. So that's the way they are.
Did you find that too, Steve, that when you went working on the book and stuff, that no matter what you wanted to do, that, because obviously, you know, each brother, you know, has their own opinions on stuff, that you'd want one of them to do something, but no matter what you did, it was just like, you just like, no, this brother has to do it this way because that's just who he is, that they kind of fight you sometimes, your characters?
I don't know, that really hasn't evolved yet, but, yeah, you can tell just by the illustrations. That they've probably got each their own personality, you know, and I'm not sure. I think Foot would be kind of the older brother leader, and Foot seems like probably he'd be the goofball out of the two, and then Foot would just kind of go along with what the other two do.
He likes to eat up.
Yeah. Yeah, they do
but
like.
But they do that. Characters do that. They want to do their own thing, and you can change them to a certain extent, but I think the real artistic process is to get into that space where it can happen, where that's when I draw the best, is when it just happens and the character sort of takes over and the pencil takes over and things happen without me actually pushing them. That's when I do my best art, I think, for sure. I had two, remember Willy and Wally, Steve? Woolly and Wally Wombat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that it wouldn't matter what I did to those, they would just spring back like a rubber band. They'd just come back to how they were. So, yeah, character has its own
emu,
life.
Is that her name?
Yeah. Yeah, Peggy Lou the emu, or Edna the emu. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a lot of books that I used to use mainly in my storytelling. They never got to publication, but I used them a lot during my storytelling. And publication was the next stage. And then I got busy and they're all sort of on the shelf or on the back boiler.
You did get your Lamington recipe published, right?
Yes, I got the Lamington, and then I've got things published in magazines. Hopscotch magazine was supposed to publish something this month, and it never did get in, but the Lamingtons are in there. Lamingtons are a cake in Australia that is made from a piece of sponge cake, and then you roll it in chocolate, and then you roll it in coconut. And it looks like a little, like a snowball type of thing. And they're very popular. And I wrote the recipe out with a goofy picture of a kangaroo and a joey eating one in a pouch. And that one I think has been published about 3 times in Hopscotch magazine. Mm-hmm. And this month is an Australian edition, and it's in there again. So,
really?
Yeah, Hopscotch magazine this month.
I'll probably get one in the mail.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Now, because I know, like, when I write, because I get this asked this a lot, you know, not just because I do editing, but because, you know, people know I write short stories and I have my book and stuff. And they always ask me, like, well, when do you know that you're forcing your character to do something you want to do? And I said, you know, I have found that when my family looks at me because I'm kind of talking to myself and they definitely think I have a multiple personality disorder, that's when I'm in the zone and that's when the book is where it should be, because, you know, basically the characters tell me what to do and I'm not telling them what to do anymore. we're having a conversation instead.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it just flows.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
When you
start
to try to force something, it's like grass, you know, when the conditions and everything are right, it grows. You can't force it to grow. And it just happens. And when something just happens.
Yeah, that's like with songwriting. My best songs just come, you know, all, you know, without trying to sit down and force a song out. It's like something happens, or, you know, and the best ones are when the music and the lyrics kind of come together all at once, you know. Then you know you got a good one.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's a good question for you guys, and you guys can hop in, you know, whoever first on this. When you're in that zone and your muse is, you know, obviously talking to you and inspiring you to try, when do you find that, typically, when does it strike for you? I know for myself, it's always like at the wrong time. I'm like driving my car, or I'm like rocking my, you know, my baby to sleep, or I'm in the shower and I'm like, okay, I have no pen, paper, or even a voice recorder handy. So when do you find that it usually strikes for you?
Not any particular time. You know, sometimes I usually keep a little notepad by the bed, and sometimes I'll wake up and there's a little tune in my head, and, you know, it's all, I always have a tape recorder too, just to hum into it, just so I don't forget it when I go back to sleep, or there might be just an idea and jot it down. And it can happen anywhere. You know, I can be driving in the car and this
driving's
crazy
a good time,
thought will
like
come into my mind. So I write it down so I don't forget, you know. Then sometimes, you know, it all comes together all in like an hour or something, the whole thing. Or sometimes it may take 2 years, you know. You kind of put it on the back burner. And of course, this is, I'm just talking about songs, you know.
No, it's not too much different for both.
And then you keep little notes, and then you go, okay, there was this line I wrote that I really liked, but I didn't know where it would fit, and now I'm working on this other thing, and I think that will fit in this, and so I keep everything, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it's written on little, you know, napkins or you know, little post-it notes or whatever in the notebook, you know. And then I really like having a computer because you can type it all in there, and then it's so easy to just change it instead of rewrite the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, I keep a notebook. I used to, if I have an artist block, I do what Julia Cameron suggests, and it's in The Artist's Way. She has a book called The Artist's Way, and then Vein of Gold, I think, is the one after that. And she suggests that you get up in the morning and you just sort of fall out of bed. Don't even open your eyes or anything. Just sit in a chair with a book, a notebook, and then just write and write. And don't even think about it. Just, it might be just blah, 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 and just write for 3 pages and then go back and have a look at it, and you'll see things sort of come out and they're actually coming from your subconscious. But if you start to think, you know, I need to write something sensible, or I need to get the spelling right, or if you're judging it all the time, that interferes with the creative process. So I found that's really helpful if I need to get back into my creative side. The other thing that I find where my ideas come is cleaning stables, which I do a lot. Muck stables, because we have 70 horses here on our on 10 acres at our boarding stable. So we have about 20 stalls to clean every morning. And when I'm just mucking stalls, I go into that space where all sorts of ideas come. It's amazing. Mainly because I'm there and I think I can't be anywhere else. I don't need to attend to anything really important. I'm just picking up poo. So it just, I get all sorts of ideas when I'm picking up poo. It's just, and I'm doing something productive at the same time. So yeah, that's where most of my ideas come from.
Yeah, well, like I said, mine's always when I'm with my kids, and of course, it's always in my hands, so it limits what I was doing. Just the other day, I was actually at I was at a birthday party for my 6-year-old daughter. She was at one of her friend's birthday parties, and I hung out because I was at the park, and I didn't want to have to like drive all the way back to come back and get her. So I just kind of found a nice shady tree, and I didn't have much else going on. So I just pulled up my recorder and just kind of started staring up the sky and waited until stuff hit me and just kind of started talking to the tape recorder. I think everybody, of course, in the park thought I was like a complete psychopath, and that's probably why they were avoiding my patch of the park. But I got about 2 picture book ideas, recorded that I have to eventually sit down and re-listen to and type it out. But I totally agree. I mean, I don't know about you, Irene and Chris, when you guys, sit down and write, but I definitely find when it's in those wee hours of the morning or in the wee hours of the evening, which they both know I'm always on the computer, that's the best time for me to actually write down whatever did pop into my head, because exactly that, my subconscious is more in control than my conscious mind, and I'm not sitting there trying to fine-tune it. I let it come out of me and flow.
Well, I think my mommy world takes up my days, so it's easier to put on my writer's cap in the evenings.
Yeah.
And for me, it's mornings. I get up probably around 5 a.m., and I write till about 9 a.m. usually, if I'm not teaching. So that's my writing schedule. I find that I'm the freshest then, and a lot of times I come up with the best ideas first thing in the morning as well. So that's my little plan.
Now, Ron and Steve, do you guys surround yourself, with anything? I know obviously, Ron, I know a lot of yours is when you're out with the horses and stuff, and I know, Steve, you talk about when the weather's nice, you go up to the mountaintops. But, I mean, is there anything else you guys surround yourself to help get that creative juices flowing and to kind of help inspire you as well? I mean, I know there's a lot of writers and children who want to write that listen to our show, and that's the question I get asked a lot too. Well, what do you surround yourself, at your desk to help, inspire your creativity? And I'm like, well, I have a bunch of books around me, and I play a lot of music. That's typically what I do. But I'm just kind of curious what you guys kind of do.
Cartoons. If I have a cartoon that has really touched a part of me, or is funny, or just sums up a situation, because cartoons are just amazing at doing that in very, very few lines can communicate so well. So I have a few cartoons that I've got, you know, up around the place. Some are my own cartoons and some are other people's. And that's that and music, of course.
Yeah.
And horses.
Yeah, music for sure.
Of course, lots of horses. Yeah, and also wide open spaces around me. I love to have wide open spaces. And I'm an endurance rider, so I'm out there a lot. I just completed my first 100 mile, and that was plenty of time to think about things.
So, yeah, Steve, I know I'm
too
music for you.
Driving in the car, or, you know, going into town. It's about 7 miles, you know, from where I live into town, and I don't even play anything on the stereo, really. I just, because, you know, there might be something comes into my head, and of course I got a little notebook there, and just people I meet, you know, or the characters in this little town and stuff. Sometimes I get a lot of ideas just out of hanging around with them.
Steve
has great songs about characters.
Yeah, I was going to say, that leads us to a whole other question, because I know a lot of people wonder how many characters, like when you're illustrating or writing, it doesn't matter if it's books or music or whatever, the people that you interact with in your life, how many of them become actual characters, or you draw the inspiration to form a character from? I know a lot of my short stories, a lot of them are based off stories my parents have told me when they were kids. Crazy stuff that they did. So a lot of my characters are really inspired from my mom and my dad, which I'm sure sometimes they wish I wouldn't do and wouldn't tell people that character is based off them. But because they're like, I really wanted to not remember that memory. But I'm like, well, you told me enough times. What do you expect? So I'm just kind of curious, do you guys kind of do that a lot? Do you see a lot of your family, friends, neighbors ending up in a lot of what you guys do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Have you ever, like, drawn
a
character, Rhonda, where, well, I'm just curious really quick, Rhonda, have you ever drawn a character where somebody that you mirrored it after looked at and said, that looks kind of like me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was one just recently, I'm trying to think of it, and I just can't think of it, but it was like a librarian or something. It was like a Miss Grundy character, and I realized that it was somebody that I was doing a storytelling with not so long ago, and that character just sort of came out of me. And I thought, it wasn't really very flattering either, so I didn't. I'm not going to mention any names.
Remember the Somewhere on the Beach?
Oh, Somewhere on the Beach, yeah. One of the album covers that I did for Steve was, it's called Somewhere on the Beach. Somewhere with the Beach, and it was done in a place, we were over in Australia, and we're on a beach called Malulaba, which is a great name, and I just, I was lying on the beach sketching seagulls and kids and balls and just, you know, things around me, and this lady, she just dumped herself right in front of me, and she was rather large. And from my perspective down on the ground, her bottom was just like this huge dome with these little legs and feet. So the feet, you had the feet, you had the rolls of fat, and then you had a dome. And then a little bit of hair sticking up because you could just see her hair on the other side of the dome. And so I sketched that, trying not to let her see me do it. And that ended up being the cover for Somewhere with the Beach. I couldn't resist it. It was just such a beautiful perspective, like from ground level. It was really good. But only that woman knew. She's famous.
Yeah.
And then I did a painting of it, remember?
I have that
and everybody
on the wall.
Wanted that painting. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you want it back, I'll bring it up next when I come up.
Everybody, it's amazing because everybody wanted to claim that it was them, which was really unusual, you know, because usually you would think, no, I don't
know. Yeah, why would you claim I'm the fat lady on the beach?
Yeah.
Well, it was probably because it was
beautifully
really
surprised
done.
Me.
It was probably because it was beautifully done, so everybody really loved it. Now, Steve, I mean, with music, especially with music, because like you said, you know, music does tell stories as well. I mean, have you ever, like, I'm sure you've written songs from situations in your life where someone later on hears it and like, is that about me? Where they feel like, you know, that they were obviously the reason why you wrote that song, or they could tell the person you're singing about or the situation you're singing about was definitely something that that they shared with you at one time.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, because there's always something behind, you know, the song. And some people, I think, realize that, yeah, it was probably about them, you know. And then some I make are just obvious, you know. Like,
yeah, most of them
are
obvious.
There was a guy up here, and Bert McLaren, and he was a park ranger at Rocky Mountain National Park forever, and his dad was, and his brother, and he was just a great character. And I wrote a song called Bert's Guitar, and it was obviously about him, you know, and this guitar that he couldn't play anymore because of his arthritis, and he donated. Anyway, so a friend and I decided we always used to play the guitar, and we wrote a few songs on it, and we decided, let's write a song about Bert's guitar, you know, and we put a little thing in there about him too, you know, and there's several I've written that are obviously about somebody, but a lot of them are
You've
just
written
about
a lot of tributes
things.
To people too.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's a good
tribute
way to
people who have passed on. Steve writes beautiful tributes to people.
Sounds like it.
And there's quite a few.
And so you guys are both just so well, you know, very talented and well-rounded, you know, creative people as well. And it's been fun having you guys on the show just because, like I said, it's not just, you know, you guys wrote and illustrated a book. I mean, you know, Steve, you have the whole musical background. Rhonda has her storytelling background and some musical background, it sounds like, besides her horses that she absolutely loves, and which has been fun. We've actually gotten quite a few comments about, as you guys have been doing your tour, there's like you know, because obviously everybody's cropping in on you, Rhonda, a little bit about, so they can see you more than the horse. They're like, is that a horse that she's up on? Like, yes. And then Steve's, of course, got this huge, beautiful background behind him. Like, where is he located, you know? So it's been fun kind of, you know, hearing some of the buzz that's been going on and the pictures, too, because it shows how diverse you guys are. And it's not just the typical headshot that you see of an author or an illustrator, you know, where it's just them with a black background or books behind them or something like that. So it's been fun, and we've enjoyed having you guys on the show. I mean, your book, The Brother's Foot, you know, is just, it's adorable, and I really think kids are going to enjoy it. I know the reviewers and the different blog hosts that have had you guys so far during the tour have all commented that, you know, they like the book. I don't know, Chris, you probably haven't read the book, have you, Chris?
No, I haven't. I've checked it out as much as I can on, you know, websites and things like that. So I haven't read it completely, but it's charming than what I have read. So.
Yeah, and I know Irene read it because today on her site is her book review of the book. Do you just want to give us kind of your breakdown really quick, Irene, on, you know, as a reviewer?
Oh, it's just, it's probably one of the most wonderful books I've seen for a while. There's a takeaway point as well. There's an important message at the end of the book about, a takeaway point, not such a message at the end of the book, but it's sort of a message that goes right through the book, and that is the relationship between the brothers. I thought that was really interesting, but I won't give it away for readers that will be reading it later. I thought everything was just so well done. The illustrations, of course, were wonderfully done, and the music is wonderfully done as well. I know that I read the book to one of my nephews just a while ago, and I guess it was a couple days ago, and he just hasn't been able to stop reading it, and he just loves it totally. So I can't say enough nice things about it, actually. It's just a wonderful book. So
thank you.
Thank you.
And can you guys both share? We'll have Rhonda go first and then Steve, just so our listeners can, you know, obviously go to your guys' websites, you know, follow what else you guys are doing, you know, as individuals as well as just, you know, the brother book, it seems like, going to be series. So, Rhonda, what's your website so they can kind of learn more about you and what you do as an author and an illustrator?
I have several. I have my blogs at HTTP, you know, the usual thing. Roo Droppings, roodropping.blogspot.com. And then I have a website at www.northernfront.net. That is my artwork, mainly my artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And then anybody can email me and ask me about anything at ronnyroo@hotmail.com. And then I can put you onto all my other websites. Quite a few of them.
All right, and Steve, how about you? So they can listen to your music and follow what you're doing in the writing world.
The music one would be stevecormymusic.com. And then I have a blog spot as well that will have all the other sites. Ronnie's is on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's stevecormy.blogspot.com. And then there is the footsong.com website that has the you know, the book, and you can hear a little bit of the song and
yeah,
and
it's been on the website.
Well. And when you go into any of those, we'll have the other sites as well that you can just click on and it'll go right to that. So. Or also, you can email me at it's crmystev at aol.com.
Thank you. It's been great having you guys both on here, and I really hope everybody who's listening, you know, live today and who will, of course, be listening later on demand, because our shows always go into the World of Ink Network archive here on Blog Talk Radio, that they'll check out your book. And, of course, you can always follow, because we're still in the middle of May, and they're doing their World of Ink tour through Stories for Children Publishing, which is at storiesforchildrenpublishing.com, and it's under the World of Ink tour tab, and you'll see it says Steve and Rhonda, and it says the Brothers Foot Tour, and you can follow their different tours. You can read places they've been earlier this month in May. They've done interviews, guest posts, which are articles on different writing tips and marketing tips and the backstory of the Brothers Foot. Plus, there's book reviews, and I think there's a couple of giveaways lined up as well that are coming up. So definitely check that out. And thank you again, guys, for being on the show. It's been a pleasure having you. It's been fun doing the tour with you and stuff. So I really hope everybody will keep following along. I've seen a lot of traffic of to the different stops that you've had during your tour. I want to say yesterday's you were both Steve and Rhonda on Friday, and then yesterday for you, Rhonda, you guys had interviews on our blog, the Family Matters blog. So they can get to know you guys individually that way, too, from some questions we asked you guys. But, yeah, it's been a blast, and I'm definitely looking forward to the sequel. Going to definitely need to have my kids listen to the full song since they haven't heard it yet.
We wish you guys
you know, a lot of success with the book. I think it's a great book and the CD as well. Now, really quick before I let you guys go, because like, we're really toward the end of the show, but I even ask you, when people buy the book, The Brothers Foot, does the music CD come with it automatically, or is that a separate purchase?
It's got to be separate, unless they get a hold of me directly.
Okay.
Or Rhonda.
We actually have included
those in the book, but you know, we did it through a self-publishing company, and they wouldn't do that. So we have to do the
package together
separate.
Yeah.
Or if someone wants to email me, then I'll send them the CDs separate.
Okay.
I have some CDs too.
All right, because I know it's for sale on Amazon and some of the other, you know, like Barnes and Noble and Borders. I know it's
just the book.
Okay, so if they want the CD, Okay, so if you guys want the CD and the book, go to Rhonda or Steve's website and get a hold of them and buy it through them. And I'm sure you guys will sign it, too, for them, too, because I know a lot of people like when they get that autographed book.
Yeah,
sure.
So I'm just throwing that out there. Not saying they'll do it, but I'm sure they will. So, again, thank you guys for being on the show. Oh, what? Go ahead, Rhonda. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Ray. Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye.
Bye. And then Chris and Irene, it's always a pleasure to do the Stories for Children show with you guys, as always. So thank you, ladies, for joining me again. And obviously we'll be here in on May 30th. We'll be talking with Lisa Yumina, who has the Milo series, so we're excited about that.
Fun.
And then, yeah, it's going to be a fun one to be talking about. And then as well, I don't have my notes in front of me, so I think that there is a good story with Marcia Casper Cook this week here on Blog Talk Radio at the World of Ink Network. And, of course, on Friday is the Writing Mama show with myself, V.S. Grenier, Marcia Casper Cook, and J.D. Holliday. And we will actually be talking with Karen LaFrance with about her book, A Quest for Good Manners. So that's going to be a fun show at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. And everybody have a great week, and we'll see you later in the World of Ink. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care. Bye.
Follow me to the World of Ink.